Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Here we are, our Friday get-together, which I always enjoy.
Bob, we love answering listener questions. We have one from Justin in Berkeley. Hi, Jim and Bob. Joe Biden basically admitted high prices were a deliberate measure to curb fossil fuel industry. Another House Street guest, Tim Wood, said forces were massively deflationary and CPI inflation was strictly a supply chain issue. Knowing what FDR did back in the 30s to curb price deflation, pouring milk into drains, buying cheese, and storing it in bunkers, does Bob think that the powers that be are deliberately creating global supply squeezes to the big no-no, deflation? And why do economists think deflation is antimatter, something that would blow us up if we hit it?
Justin, that is such a good overview, and I love your line that deflation is antimatter. Yeah, this is good stuff. We've been in a classic great financial bubble, and I've got about five features that are common to the conclusion of each one, and this bubble has completed, and we're likely to go into a post-bubble contraction, whereby most prices go down. But what you've got here is a tremendous rise in prices. Now, in 1929 and 1873, with those financial bubbles, you also had a final spurt of business activity, and commodity prices did go up. So this is not unusual. But what is unusual has been the intervention and the policymakers are to blame for the extraordinary part of the rise in some prices. You come in and you shut down with the COVID panic, lockdown. They shut down a huge part of the global economy, and the way it was applied in Canada and the U.S., they also shut down millions of small businesses, keeping the big boxes open. So this was a disaster. And then, and now with the policymakers, let's call Putin a policymaker, and his policy at the moment is to, well, actually, in 05, Putin addressed a Congress or something like that, and he said, the major event of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union. He did not say World War I, World War II, etc., or that communists had murdered 100 million of their citizens. No, he said it was the collapse of Russia's Soviet Union. And so this step is trying to restore that. But as a result, it is shutting down a tremendous amount of supply of grains from Ukraine, which has been, from time to time, the breadbasket of Europe since the 1300s. So, well, in 1917, it stopped being the breadbasket of anywhere with the communists. So now, then also you mentioned, so part of it is supply chain, part of it is the central banks going crazy and pushing all kinds of credit into the markets. But then also you mentioned about Roosevelt did in the 1930s to curb price deflation, and this was a problem. In 1920, the global boom in commodities blew out. And in the U.S., that boom in commodities drove the consumer price inflation to 24%. And now they're all chuffed about 8%. So at any rate, then it crashed. So that 1921, the rate of U.S. CPI inflation was minus 16. So the Fed was riveted by the prospect of deflation and was easy all the way through the 1920s, not understanding that when you have had a global boom in commodities, I mean a really big one, it's always followed a decade later by an insane mania in financial assets, which we're getting. So then we all know that for most of the last decade, the Fed has been saying that under 2% inflation is bad and we're worried about deflation and we're going to ease. And it's the same practice and it's the same ignorance. They don't know. Anybody in central banking, I swear, doesn't understand the full implications of hyperinflation and financial assets, which is what we've had. So yes, the FDR did put together the New Deal, and they decided that there was too many of things, so they were indeed pouring milk down the drains and paying farmers not to grow and paying farmers to kill and dispose of hogs, that sort of thing. Now, this is, they called it the New Deal, but it also prompted, it was a highly regard, well, he got a Pulitzer journalist, what's his name, Haskell. In 1938 or 39, he published a book called The New Deal in Old Rome. So what were the bureaucrats doing in Rome, you know, 1700 years ago? Well, if it was in a deflationary contraction, they would give special below-market interest rate loans to farmers. They would also pay vineyards to tear out grapevines because there was too much wine, and intrude in whichever way they can. So the thing, the big observation is that policymakers respond. They don't create. So, and they respond to the same financial forces in the same way. So, for the most of the last decade, they decided arbitrarily that inflation wasn't high enough, so they put the money, the pedal to the metal on the money side. And then you go into a wild financial boom. So this is where we are now. And we've seen the damage done to the stock markets, but we have yet to see the equivalent damage done to the economy. Oh, sure, the rest of the world is sort of suffering a contraction, particularly China, and now Russia, but it hasn't really hit North America yet. But here's the rule on great financial bubbles, is that when the stock market peaks, the business side of the boom rolls over as well. Now, through most of business history, some group have created what they call the leading indicators on the economy. And included in that is the S&P. And because typically, or in ordinary business cycle and cyclical stock markets, you have a peak in the stock market and the economy would peak, you know, 10 to 12 months later. So the S&P is the leading, but not when you've been in a financial bubble. In 1929, as we all know, the stock market peaked in early September, and the NBER that keeps track of the business cycle in the U.S., on their record, the recession started in that August. And then they also got it back to 1873 bubble, where, of all things, the U.S. stock market peaked in that September, and the recession started in October. So the point that we've had this year is that if January was the speculative high for the stock market, and it turned out to be that, that eventually you'd see that the economic numbers would be softening as well once they came out. So, and I believe this is happening. So thanks very much, Justin. That was a very good question.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your attention today. The first one, Russia fails to meet bond obligations.
Yep, that one is serious because only a few days later there was a headline that Russia was hoping to make its payments. And this is the problem in the post-bubble contraction, is that during the financial mania, countries, people, and businesses take on huge amounts of debt because it becomes relatively cheap. And then the economy stalls out, and then people find, oh, gee, I'm unemployed. Or a business says, oh, I haven't got any pricing power. I can't sell widgets at a good profit. And then the problem becomes servicing the debt. And there's more to it than that, is that in the financial mania, most of the debt issued is underwritten in the financial center. Now in New York. And due and payable in U.S. dollars. And that then, so you can consider the U.S. debt bubble as an immense short of U.S. dollars. So we'll see how all this goes. But, yeah, we've got another headline about, currency problems.
Yes, now we have, let's see here. The Bank of Japan chair vows to powerfully continue his, monetary easing.
Yeah.
And doesn't the government of Japan own something like 50% of the stocks on Japanese exchange or more than that?
It could be, but you know, Japan had its wonderful Nikkei bubble, and it completed on the last trading day of 1989. Now, on that boom, the rest of the world wasn't booming to the equivalent, but it was a unique Tokyo boom, Japanese speculators were out buying things around the world, you know, Pebble Beach Golf Course and stuff like that. You just had to be in on the action. So then it crashed, and it crashed very hard. And the reason for including this headline is the Bank of Japan has been unbelievably easy ever since. Now, that's more than 30 years ago. And their economic performance has been, you know, nothing. And their stock market and goes up and down with the rest of the world. But the point of this headline is that the Bank of Japan has been easy ever since 1990. And their theories don't work. There's, you know, whatever. They're all crazy.
Europe had negative interest rates. Yeah. How did that help them out?
Nothing. Uh-huh. They experience the same ups and downs. They've got a financial bubble going. But actually, I think that the reason why they got negative is that the European Central Bank kept buying bonds, and bond investors kept buying bonds, and they kept humping the money supply, thinking that it's the same old era. They think that when they push money supply out, it is a direct link to GDP growth, but it isn't. And if the public's speculating in financial assets, that's where the extra credit goes. So then the reason why the 10-year note got to minus in Germany was not because the central bank there had a policy to drive it down to minus. It was that their policy was to push money into the market thinking they'd drive the economy. But it drove bond speculation. And let me tell you, in all of financial history, you have never had negative interest rates nominal. Never. Never. So it's a sign of the crazy times. It's about inflating credit. It won't quit until the central bankers are absolutely and totally destroyed and condemned and their theories realize they're to be absolute nonsense. So, sorry, yeah.
Bob, I was going to say, if negative interest rates were a good idea, we would have seen the ancient Chinese, Romans, and Greeks instituted, and the Persians as well. They sure didn't. Yeah.
No, you could only do it with today's theories about interventionist economics and interventionist central banking. There's no other way it would happen.
U.S. home prices surged 20% in March, but housing starts are down. I noticed in Canada as well, building permits were down over the spring.
Yeah, now that is the, that's 20% year over year. Like the way the headline reads in March, no, it wasn't in 1 month, it was year over year. And, but at the same time, high mortgage rates, and maybe speculative exhaustion is that the housing starts and things like that are down, so, and transactions and prices and stuff. So it looks like the U.S. housing market is peaking as it did in 2006.
The Turkish lira and their CPI, they're having some kind of economic problems there and trying to talk tough about not allowing Sweden and Finland into NATO. Is Erdogan talking tough, but he doesn't have any ammunition to use, really, economically, anyway.
This was a headline from today, and it was their producer price index is now up, and as the headline called it, a shocking 132%. So what does Erdogan do? The president goes after short sellers. Those, I guess, who have been selling the currency short, as hyperinflation craters the lira. So, it's that the issue here is that, and that this began in March a year ago, where there were headlines about the Turkish central bank running out of liquidity, and there were also headlines about Argentina, and a small one about South Africa, and I was quite alert to that because in a the conclusion of a great financial bubble, the problems start in lesser exchanges, as I used to call them, but now with China so big, you have to say outlying exchanges, and then, of course, it spread to then China since June a year ago, has been in what I call a post-bubble contraction, and then with the insanities in Russia and the steps, sanctions and whatnot against them, you can bet that Eastern Europe is now in the contraction. And with the exceptionally hard hit to the S&P this year, one can conclude that the U.S. is in a recession now, too. Now, there was there's another tool on that one, Jim, and that's the yield curve, which is the difference between long-duration bonds and near-term bills and stuff like that. So, and it does a standard movement as a boom completes, and it's when short rates get above long rates, and it's called inversion. A curve inverts. And we've got the charts on the yield curve in the U.S. back to 1857. And the conclusion is that every time the U.S. yield curve has inverted, it's been followed by a recession. So that's an old tool that's very reliable. So, I'm convinced that the financial world is in a post-bubble contraction. And, after mid-year, hey, oftentimes things are favorable into mid-year, and certainly favorable has been the rally in crude oil, which we were on to. Copper, so other things. But we are concerned that after August, in the great financial hits have occurred in the fall of the year, more so than any other time of year.
Do we know why that happens, Bob? Why? October, November are so deadly?
I can't figure it out. If there's a, in the 1340s, the financial market was centered in Florence in northern Italy, and one of the big games was the mortgage market. And you were into a contraction, and it was a disaster, and there's an excellent book written on it by an Italian business historian. His name's Cipolla, C-I-P-O-L-L-A, I guess. Something like that. Anyways, the worst parts of that terrible contraction occurred in the fall. Now, prior to that, there's evidence in Rome of all kinds of financial disasters, but I've been unable to see anything about what time of the year they happened. It's one of those things, Jim. Crashes can happen in the fall, and it's worth making the observation, but you can't figure out why. There's just no way.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you, and we're looking forward to next Friday.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for Bob or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, and we'll gladly ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.